because I think we do all need to engage. This is an urgent debate. The solutions are certainly not coming from the corporate media and the corporate powers and the governments. So I think it's really important that we don't sort of leave it to experts. We've actually got to become experts in all these fields. And Mike pointed out to me the blurb that we put on the leaflet was quite well timed, because it mentions that Wall Street banks, it talks about the crisis, and yet Wall Street banks are bailed out while the poor face home foreclosures in the first world. Well, this was written, you know, a few weeks ago, and of course we've had the biggest bailout now announced of these two huge mortgage organisations. So in the US. Well, I'm going to intersperse with a bit of multimedia, so you won't have to see too much of me. And I'm focusing on, Jim's laid out the crisis, the environmental crisis and the economic crisis, and you could call them both a meltdown, or an impending meltdown, and in some cases, certainly the melt has started. But I'm going to be focusing more on the political fight back. What sort of fight back has started? What can we expect to see? What's happening internationally? What can we see here in Australia? What can we do? How can we interact with it? But just to set the scene one more time, that's maybe, I thought as I looked at this, it's almost like the setting for a science fiction novel. I mean, you have a planet that's running out of the very substance that so much of its society is lubricated on. What was once taken for granted, cheap oil, is now reaching peak and decline and spiraling costs for what's left. At the same time, the same system is cooking the planet. According to NASA's James Hansen, the level of greenhouse gases in the atmosphere already is past the safe level. It's already past the safe level. The reality of climate change, beyond the books and the modelling, the reality is going beyond that. Because, you know, people who are scientists or involved in science or know that scientists are always going to err on the side of conservatism. They're going to err with their predictions. And what is actually happening is beyond what the science has predicted. So it's more greenhouse. We're more greenhouse gas sensitive than first thought. So the kind of figure that has been stated, for example, in the Ghana report, is far too high to be sustainable. So the northern ice cap is melting 100 years before what was predicted. So the emergency is actually that we not just have to stabilise and get to the point where the atmosphere is... The atmosphere is able to draw down as much CO2 as actually being put into the air. We actually have to go beyond that, so that there's actually more being able to be absorbed by society than actually is being put out. So in this science fiction situation, finally on this planet, along with this oil addiction and this cooking of the planet, this suicidal situation, is an economic foundation that's really teetering. It's really unstable. And some of the biggest corporations, as we already mentioned, are faltering. Because the system's not set up to deal with the addiction to oil or the rectify the forces that are cooking the planet, but of course to fill the bottomless pockets of the powerful few. And, you know, Lenin said, Russian revolutionary Vladimir Lenin said some time ago that the second last capitalist would sell, or the last capitalist would sell the rope that was used to hang him. And you could paraphrase that now, I think, to say that in this system we're seeing that the capitalists will sell the last barrel of oil and burn the last chunk of coal and turn the last head of corn into ethanol while the planet burns and starves, etc., if they can make a buck from it. Of course, the sketch is no fiction, unfortunately. But it's very stunning. Perhaps most stunning of all, beyond all that, is the solutions. Because the solutions are so pathetic. So pathetic. So futile. Put forward by those in control of the capitalist system. The biggest market failure that this planet has seen, And the solutions are, leave it to the market. Leave it to the market that is cooking environment. Leave it to the market that has got you hooked on this substance, on oil. Leave it to that market. It is like where Icarus, flying towards the sun on our wax wings, and the capitalist saying, okay, we're going down, flap harder, quicker. It's nonsensical, it's illogical, and we've got to be very clear that the solutions for the crisis, they're not coming. They're not going to come from capitalist governments. They're not going to come from their talk pieces, their spin doctors and so forth. We've got to be thinking and putting forward the solutions and linking up with those around the world who are putting forward the solutions that actually go away from the market system that's endangering us. So that's what we want to look at tonight. Understanding the crisis in order to challenge it, in order to challenge and to change the world. So we might have a little look at this slideshow. As Jim pointed out, we know from history, that's a little snapshot, I suppose, of the food crisis. We know from history, in the face of these crises, and from painful experience, actually, of the working class, that capitalism will survive these crises if it can force the working masses to carry the burden of the pain. And that's what's happened before. And that's where we saw, entire nations forced to privatise their assets and restructure and all that kind of thing, sell off every public asset, put it in the hands of the corporations, and there was a big retreat of the working class. Now, ironically, the methods used by the rich to resolve the system's crises actually laid the basis for this crisis. For the current financial crisis. The world was basically forced to accept a monster debt-based expansion of consumption. It was all a bit of a bubble. And there were new ways for reckless speculation created by the massive expansion of the derivatives market. So not only could you gamble on the stock market, you could now gamble on where the stocks were going to be in 6 months or in 12 months or in different currency or what have you. And none of this was actually creating anything. It wasn't a real, link to any real economy. So it was all a certain bubble that was building there. Now this scheme is coming apart spectacularly. And they're spending hundreds of billions of dollars to bail out the big financial institutions. But these are just stopgaps for the systematic problem. Now we're going to experience the first major US recession in decades. And we've already seen tens of thousands have lost their homes. Now, this crisis will come at a huge human and environmental cost, and there's no joy in it unless there's a significant challenge to the capitalists. So the capitalists will try and make us pay. But there is a positive crisis, if you like, that's also going on at the moment, and that is the crisis of the legitimacy of market solutions. Now, we saw this at the start with things like the Seattle protest, the Battle for Seattle, the anti-globalisation movement, where people said, this is all bullshit, this is a lie, this globalisation is benefiting the rich and it is crushing the poor. And that was already eating away at that idea. It retreated a bit in the first world with the after the invasion of Iraq, but actually it didn't retreat globally because it actually gave birth to that movement against corporate globalisation gave birth to the Venezuelan Revolution and the mass movements that are sweeping, the radical movements sweeping Latin America. We've seen, of course, the Chavez government, people can talk about here, some of the moves they've done in terms of health and housing, but also food security, cheap foodstuffs through Mercal and PDVSA. And also through ALBA, a different sort of alliance of countries beyond the free trade agreement and all these exploitative alliances that benefit the rich countries. Now Bolivia's got its first indigenous president. Ecuador has seen a radical shift to the left with Rafael Correa. Nicaragua with Daniel Ortega. The leftist former bishop who's recently elected in Paraguay to put an end to the longest military dictatorship. The possibilities for the FMLN in El Salvador next year. Yes. And the growing alliances between these countries, the growing alliances, the axis of hope between Venezuela, Bolivia, Cuba, and others who maybe not as left, but basically because there is that stronger axis of hope, is pulling some of those countries like Argentina and so forth into certain alliances to the left. Well, I mean, the food crisis, as we can see there, it can't be solved, and Cuba's pointed this out very clearly, it can't be solved by Band-Aid solutions. Now, I'm reminded of this, you know, the terrible, the painful concerts years back, Band-Aid. People remember Band-Aid? Feed the world, let them know it's Christmas time. That's pretty disgusting, patronising. We don't want to be forcing that on anyone. Well, you know, the point is that these symbolic donations, this sort of symbolic gestures, don't satisfy and are not sustainable. As a basic start, agricultural production in the South countries must be actually rebuilt and developed. And anyone who's seen The Power of Community, how Cuba survived peak oil, will know a good example of how a poor, blockaded country, organised along people and planet first basis, can rebuild sustainably. Of course, we need this on a far greater scale, but the potential is also far greater. I think that's an important point to underline. The potential is far greater. If a tiny, poor, embargoed Cuba can achieve food sovereignty, and still, I think Havana produces 80% of its food through its organic urban agriculture by basically turning all of these plots of vacant land into organic farms. If Cuba can do that while being blockaded, etc., and still send more doctors to the third world than the World Health Organization in totality, then what could the resources of developed countries do in the service of meeting the needs of people for food and sustainability? So there's now the prospect of a re-globalisation of that anti-capitalist movement. I think that's what's ahead of us. And we have a powerful combination. On the one hand, the revolutionary example and inspiration, Cuba ongoing, teaming up with Venezuela, Bolivia and others, in the face of, on the other hand, rapidly advancing struggles against the world food and fuel crisis. People can't eat, they can't move, they've got no access to transport and so forth. Now, there's another encouraging reality that we should heed, and this is one of the most basic aspects of Marxism. That is that most people will be drawn into struggle to change the world, not through Green Left Weekly. Green Left Weekly plays a great role. Not through ideas, but through experience. Through their experience, you know, we can get despondent about the Australian working class. It's really not quite, you know, we see Venezuela or something and it's a bit frustrating, and we go out in the street, do a store with Green Left Weekly, and it can seem like we might be a bit of time away. We might lament the Rudd honeymoon. But that sort of view is being shaken as these global crises come home here in Australia. Drought is going to be a permanent fact of Australian life. That means farmers and people, you know, and people who can't afford food and so forth are really going to be shaken. The fuel price is going off the chart. So, I mean, Rudd came in, probably thought it was an easy ride, you know, back of a deep hatred of Howard, you know. Howard was really hated. Rudd never really put forward very progressive policies, a little bit better than Howard, but nothing, didn't promise the world. So you could easily think, okay, a few symbolic gestures, well, you know, it'll take quite a long time for people to start to see through it and start to get, you know, angry about this government and so forth. And that's maybe what could have happened. And we saw, certainly, he signed Kyoto and great, you know, he did the apology, and that was quite a moving day to the stolen generations. Some small moves around work choices, but certainly he hasn't scrapped that. But you'd think it would take a bit of time for people to see through these gestures. But things are speeding up. Because the Rudd government's coming up against the global reality that capitalism cannot solve, whether it's the Rudd version or the Howard version. You see it starkly with the petrol. And they talk about Fuel Watch, and Rudd puts forward Fuel Watch, and we may be able to save you 2 cents at the pump. But meanwhile, as he's talking about it, it's going up 10, 20, 30, 40 cents. It means nothing. It's doubled in recent years, petrol prices. And they're talking about $8 a litre within 10 years, the CSIRO. This is already having a real effect. People are being forced onto public transport. Many more people are going to be forced onto a public transport system that is crap, that is underfunded, under-resourced. They are sacking, they're doing this in New South Wales, they're cutting back on staff. They're putting through tunnels here in Brisbane and not putting in the public transport infrastructure. The fuel crisis doesn't just hit transport, of course, it then impacts on food and virtually everything, because everything has a fuel component to virtually all of it. Well, just to conclude, in Australia, the initiatives, I think our initiatives and leadership around a global warming challenge and its concrete intersection with working people and how it's affecting the working class is really crucial. We've just heard the Garner report is out, and this really shows it starkly. A report that indicates that there is a very serious crisis, but puts forward, quite poor. The only solution is to trade pollution. Corporations amongst themselves trading pollution, and the market will sort it out. But the science is saying we need urgent action now from every sphere. As Green Left Weekly put it a week or two ago, we need both to plant the trees now and to shut down the coal power station and to have the transfer to renewable energy and so forth. We can't just say, well, we can continue to crank out three more coal mines, but what we'll do is over here, we're going to plant, we're going to cut down some old growth, but we'll plant some pine plantations and they'll suck out a bit of CO2, so it'll be okay. That's ridiculous. And of course, the corporations are jockeying for position. How much compensation can they get? How much can they get back? Oh, we're going to be hard hit. We're the coal companies, so give us, please, give us most of our money back after we pay. It's hopeless. I think there are two key focuses that are simple and understandable that we want to be pushing for in this situation. That people can understand. These are specific proposals now with this climate crisis, not abstract targets. We had a bit of a debate, in the lead up to the federal elections, what's a good target for 2020, 2050? To some degree, that's beside us now. The two specific proposals, one, a mass social investment in renewable energy. There absolutely has to be a real turning of the economy toward renewable energy. Massive renewable energy production. We can't leave it up to the market, to the corporations. Now, we do have examples, a war economy, where manufacturing was turned towards production for war. Well, why can't manufacturing be turned towards production for taking up the climate change challenge, for wind, solar, geothermal and so forth? We want to counterpose this to what Anna Bligh came out with just a few days ago. They will triple coal in this state by 2030, she cheers. Triple coal, and Queensland is currently, through coal, emitting 30% of Australia's greenhouse gases, and they want to triple that.
Well, shoot her, that's not a problem.
But of course, it's not just her, it's the corporations that are all part of the mix. So I think there is a real challenge for us there. The second thing is the mass public transport expansion. I mean, this is absolutely necessary. Make it free, make it frequent. We've been talking about this in Socialist Alliance for some time, but every day and every week it becomes more relevant and more real to people as more people just go, I cannot fill up my car, I can't do it anymore. And when it hits $2, there's going to be a whole wave more people. But then there's no public transport to go on to. It's too full. There's none near your house. It's unreliable. You stand there for 2 hours. It doesn't come. So I think we need to launch into those sort of campaigns. And that's, I might just play this. This is a 4 minute. This is quite funny, I think. The Scottish Socialist Party have you can pull it down, I'll explain it and just explain where it is. It's this, if you double click on this, 4 minute ad that the Scottish Socialist Party have put out on TV. Anyway, it speaks for itself. Okay, so just to finish up, I think we need to launch those sorts of campaigns. Campaigns to mobilise around. We really need to be looking at how we can bring people out. There was a protest down in Newcastle with the Camp for Climate Action. I think 1,000 people marched on the Newcastle coal port and shut it down for some time, and there were various actions around there, which I think is a very good start. We need to reignite, if you like. We've got some assets that we want to use, of course. We've got the best, I'm biased, but I'm sure it is, the best environmental and socialist newspaper in Australia, and possibly, the envy of many across the globe. And we want to be using that to get people around, to get people involved, to campaign with people, to subscribe and so forth, and encourage people here. If you want to help get Green Left out, that is a great way to bring some of these alternative solutions and necessary solutions to people's attention, and to meet people and to let people know about the events that are going on and so forth. And we'd be only too happy to, you don't have to do it by yourself. You can meet up with people, come to one of our stalls. It's a good article on the Ghana report in this week's. Next week, actually, we have a bit of a milestone for Green Left Weekly. We will have our first ever Arabic supplement in next week's issue of Green Left Weekly. This has been organised with some Sudanese socialists who have joined Socialist Alliance and who are putting together, they're very supportive of Green Left and putting together a supplement. So this will allow us obviously to reach out to a lot of people in the Arabic community, and obviously to get even more flak from ASIO.